Should we do it at some point? Hello, hello. Hello, hello, hello. Hey, Peter. Hello, everyone.
Hey, how's that?
How's
and
it going?
Hello, everyone out there.
Welcome, everybody, to the Research VR podcast. We are live again in Big Screen. Let me get my hands out here. In Big Screen, and where are we? Hey! And we're here to talk a little bit about science again. It's one of our favorite things to do.
And VR.
VR and science, and kind of talk about how it works, what is on our mind, but, oh, well, seems like my co-host teleported to a far-off seat, so this is going to be a solo show.
No. I'm back. I don't want to.
I'm over the camera. Such technical difficulties.
I'm just confused with VR, you know. It's not every time I'm using this amazing immersive technology. Anyway, research true. And stuff. What's been happening? What's going on with research VR? What are we going to talk about today?
Well, let me pull up my screen.
We have an agenda.
Where's my screen?
You have it. Like, it's projected.
There it is. Yeah. Oh, no. Oh, no. It's now grabbing the camera and the screen. Oh, this is a mess. Sorry. This is...
Oh, my God.
Big screen.
This is so brain fog.
Big screen. VR. Yay. Oh, my God. Sorry.
Yeah, well, we
let me fix these things. Ooh, there it is.
Ooh, whoa.
Fantastic.
I have it behind and in front of me.
Let me just check that it looks decent. Oh, there we go. Bing.
It does. You right now see what we see in another dimension.
That's right.
Yes.
We were talking about NVIDIA's SIGGRAPH findings and their very focal lenses. We didn't know much about them last week because they didn't really say much. And then I found this video.
They didn't for sure.
Where they kind of talk about a little bit about the curved sunglasses, the hologram, and the laser. I think these names are slightly a little too simplistic, calling something a hologram, which is essentially like a Fresnel glass.
And
they talk about their other thing, which is their very focal lens, where you can see it kind of bending. And they essentially... They do the same thing, which is create multiple planes of focus.
Yeah, focus.
Where here, essentially, it's the way they do that is lasers that are being reflected off these curved sunglasses and then being projected onto the hologram. But they didn't really go deep into how it's very focal in terms of like being able to create multiple planes of focus, but in their second thing, this kind of shows you exactly how it works. But those two aren't the same thing.
Can do it. Okay, that's strange. Because here I understand how with the lens shaping itself, you can definitely reshape light. And by doing some weird algorithms, you know, how you project the images on top of it, you definitely can do some magic. But the previous one, I don't get still.
Well, we just wanted to clarify and add in a little bit. This is actually a great talk. We'll link it for people.
40 minutes, they might explain it.
Yep. And I mean, the interesting part is actually the talker here goes into how they have right now the current rendering process has all these steps. And in what we need to eliminate in these steps for us to get down to like almost zero basically zero latency. Tracking and everything that you'd want, as well as the current resolution. He puts things in terms of megapixels. Like we're at 450 megapixels per per eye, and what we need to be at is a million. so it's pretty interesting. Anyway, this is a great talk.
It also boils down, to be honest, to megapixels or pixels per inch or per not inch but per angle, right?
Well, so, I mean, this is just the full thing.
Yeah,
is what he calls it. I'm trying to find the exact keyframe where he talks about it.
Fascinating.
But yeah, really, really well done. Seems like NVIDIA is obviously like thinking way far ahead. You can look forward as well and towards the camera, Peter, so people can see your lovely face in VR.
Yes, definitely. Hello.
Hello, indeed.
Do they see me right now? No, I don't think
so. Yeah, they can.
They do.
I need to open up chat on my phone so I can.
Seems like we're live. It's everywhere. A quite interesting point that, you know, NVIDIA is being someone who is majorly pushing towards innovation, having the hugest revenue they ever had, is particularly helping the VR ecosystem grow, as it seems.
This is exactly what I was talking about in terms of limits of human perception. Yeah, this is where we are, modern VR, 450 megapixels per second, I think being rendered, per second. And what we need to, is not a million, but 100,000. I'm so bad with my scales.
But it's still a lot. It's really 100 times more. Well, not 100, but 50 times more.
It's 200 1080p TVs, essentially, that are need to be projected to your eyes.
That's a lot.
Yeah. Peter, what's going on here? Oh, actually, we want to talk a little bit about the format of the show, how we want to kind of go
exactly
and do these. We want to have a particular topic per conversation that we have, whether we have guests or not. And then we'll probably talk a little bit about news not surrounding that particular topic. So this week we'll talk about mobile AR and where we are, what impact we think it's going to make, and is it any good? But we also want to kind of talk about these things. So let's get through these shorter stories first, and then we'll dive into deeper into mobile AR.
Perfect. So let's start maybe with a short video. And for the audience listening and not watching, I can describe what it is.
Are we doing the...
I'm right now.
This one?
We can do that. Yeah, okay, we can do that. So what you guys will see in the video, or you when you listen can imagine a plate full of small rubber balls, or plastic balls, because they said rubber is even louder. So this machine has a treadmill below it, and it has a lot of balls that you walk on top of it. Now,
it's a treadmill.
It can rotate. It's basically a treadmill, but it can rotate the plate that the balls are kind of molded into, because it tracks my body via the Kinect. And whenever I go left or right, in VR, obviously, so I don't, in the video, I'm not I'm walking fancy, it kind of corrects my walking. So I can walk in a circle, but I still always face the same direction. And it kind of moves me backward and forward, depending on whether I walk forward and back.
So
and it's super loud.
It's loud?
Super exciting. Why? It's very loud.
What's so loud about it?
Those are making a noise. As the motors, then the rattling of the balls, and also the friction.
The interesting thing to note is that there's actually, I can see an actual treadmill underneath the balls themselves, right? Yes. Interesting. It's cool that you're not wearing a hip. Oh, it's only forward?
Well, this treadmill itself only moves forward, but it moves the rotating plate. Yeah, there I kind of overdid it. You
almost fall.
Yeah, but I really overdid it. So the trick is you don't have to look at it. You really have to pretend you're really walking. That feels very natural. The moment you kind of try to think about the balls and look at them, it feels very confusing.
So.
But it's a one-directional treadmill that kind of moves the balls that are molded into a plate that itself rotates.
Okay.
Sure, that describes.
But the question in everyone's mind is, can you turn or can you only walk forward?
Yes. No, you can definitely turn. Whenever you turn, the platform turns with you.
How is it?
The balls.
So that's all based on the Kinect in terms of doing the body tracking.
Exactly.
And that's cool.
And I suggested them a lot of different tracking solutions. And he said that the Kinect has one advantage. It's very easy to use. And because I'm always front facing the Kinect, they don't have a problem of occlusion on anything. It gives them a nice skelet, and it works. So they don't need anything more sophisticated.
What phase?
Obviously, there are some.
What phase are they in? Like in terms of, is this something that's just still a prototype?
Okay, here comes a German story. The guys apparently are production guys, and they are very focused on plastic. Apparently, those guys, the whole business of them is doing some plastic molds, and this seems to be a hobby project of them. So
interesting.
I have absolutely no idea whether it will launch or not, but they build it. They think it can be embedded into the floor of arcades, obviously be slightly bigger and stuff. So it's apparently a passion project.
Interesting. That's cool. That's totally fair.
One thing. They have to get this boat out when they have to transport it. So there was apparently the daughter of the guy sitting with a vacuum cleaner. They made an extra adapter for the vacuum cleaner that sucks the balls in and then releases them. So they literally have to get all the balls out before they remove it or transport it. So it's a very weird system.
Ball by ball has to be removed.
Yes. But they had like a special handle or an adapter for a vacuum cleaner that would suck like five out at a time. So they had like to go in, it would suck them, then you would release it. Go in, Saxon, really. It's a very weird concept. Yes.
That's very funny.
German success story, I would say.
I want to ask.
Shout out to Hanno VR.
I was going to ask what their names are. We should give them a shout out.
The name is somewhere in the video. I think it's in the beginning, if you scroll.
let's get their logo in there.
Wait.
Pathbender?
No, one frame back.
Pathbender. I think it's pathbender.de. Yeah, there it is.
Yes. Yes, pathbender.de is what they are. And I met them at the Hanno VR meetup. It's a community meetup in Hanover for VR enthusiasts.
Cool.
Yeah, crazy stuff. Not expecting this to be in everyone's home, but it's working.
Awesome.
Okay, next short story.
Next short story, if you want to call it. You send me a picture.
This is a very short story.
What is this? Yes.
I would describe it's a box it's a box with a fan and cartridges inside, and you synchronize it with your 360 video. So whenever you see a sea, it sprays a sea smell. Whenever you see the sky, it sprays a sky smell, and so on and so on. It costs like over $3,000. The cartridges are super expensive. Marketing reasons might be good. I just wanted to say I don't believe in this technology whatsoever. The smell did not add any immersion, and I'm, for cinema, it's super, but I don't want to have this at home. So I don't see VR developing in that direction in the personal usage.
That's fair.
And it smelled kind of bad.
I mean, I wouldn't knock it entirely because it's another level of immersion, right?
It is, but I didn't feel more immersed. I don't know. But that's just me and my personal view. I just wanted to give a small rant.
I've tried a few.
People like it out.
I've tried a few different smellometers, let's call them.
Yeah?
Just random things here and there. There was a Japanese demo that I tried at SVVR 2017, this year, where they had four smells. Let me go through them. One was chocolate. The other one was coffee. There might have been one more. And then the last one was your girlfriend or like a Japanese doll that you... No, not that. But like, it was just like, you have to lean into a girl and smell her. And it was like very... It was very off-putting because like, it smelled like a perfume. And like, I guess you can manufacture that pretty easily. So that aspect of it kind of was very convincing. You're like, whoa, why am I so close to this thing? And it's like smelling like a person.
Okay, yes.
So that, I mean, that was compelling. And
but you had a very...
But I'm not
but
saying
you had a very product. Interactive experience.
Right. This isn't product that you
want to buy. 360 video with smell, not really, no.
Plus, these are cartridges you have to load, right? Each one of these.
Yes, and they are and they are very expensive.
I can imagine. Well,
they smell weird.
Chlorama. Yeah, so, that's what they're called. Olorama. No, right?
Olorama. Good luck to the company. I hope you do well. I don't need one, but maybe people will enjoy it. Okay.
I think I need to bring the camera a little bit closer to us. Oh, and we lost our big screen. Yay!
That's so, okay.
I
can already start the next short story. We just will show you a part of a video that I today recorded. Life at the VR base in Bern. Oh no, we will do the.
Oh, let me pull that up.
Let's just do the video. So, I'm right now in the VR base in Berlin, which is some kind of hub for innovation and other things. And there is a hackathon / game jam that is focused on creation in VR, and it's actually supported and present by the Oculus Medium team. So there are like three people from Medium. Oculus Medium.
That's cool.
Here in Berlin. They came extra here. They hand-selected the hackers or the participants.
Wait. That is you. That is him.
Yes.
That's this beautiful face. Yes. Not that one.
Yes.
The other bearded one.
Ah, okay, yes.
Yes. Anyway, continue. Exactly. I didn't mean to
and
stop you.
No, it's fine. I was just confused. Who's who? Oh my gosh, I'm losing my self-awareness. But the video quickly shows, and I'm there with Sarah Lisa, who organized it and who is in charge of the Berlin base. Very quickly, quick pitches what the guys and girls are all working on, and it's very interesting just to see a different approach to VR. It's not so geeky in terms of hardware and stuff, but they're really creating art or creating assets and having a lot of fun. And I would say, if you want to see what happened here, check the video, we will link to it, or check it in our video, so we have a video in the video. that I did today live, and now I'm live podcasting about a video that I live podcasted. Whatever. It's just quite impressive.
Nice. So it's all art, kind of, it's art-focused hackathon? It's,
yes, pretty much, because Medium was mostly art, right?
Well, yeah. And that in 3D assets.
There is a dog. I interviewed the dog regards VR, but he didn't answer me his magic secret.
That's nice to have a puppy. Secret. Cool. Yeah, if you guys are in Berlin, you guys should totally be dropping by VR Base. And well, he awesome you're not place. Based out of there every day, but you're around.
So. No, I'm just here for a secret project.
That's right. Our European fans can go visit Peter. American fans can come visit me. Oz. We didn't even make introductions. I'm sorry, guys. We were really off our game this morning. I'm Oz Balabanian. This is Peter Lekhoff.
Oh, true.
And this is the Research VR podcast.
Yeah,
finally. It's kind of a late morning.
It's never too late.
That's right. Yes. Another quick thing. I'll be in Copenhagen in like two weeks. When? In 2 weeks for CopenX. It's a conference. Right. CopenX.
What is it?
CopenX. it's a conference around. It's around startups and about VR and I think I'm going to be talking about some things there.
It sounds like a very distinct conference from some other conferences.
It popped into my feed late last minute, and I'm excited to go visit my good VR friends there. All right, let's stop this hackathon. Oh no!
Yeah,
this camera. It's the bane of my
existence. So the next story is also very short, and I just want to give you a thought experiment or kind of a thought that I had watching it. So I was arguing with people on the internet. I usually don't do it, but I was in a bad mood, and I was on the internet arguing with people about VR, and I came across this video that has nothing to do with the argumentation, but it came out of anger, so maybe it influenced my thought.
Yes? Is this right? No? Oh, yes. Okay, then. Yes.
It's perfect. So when you have a leap motion, you usually would program an application that uses the potential of leap motion in using all your fingers. You know, all those weird pinching movements, whatever. Like whatever you use from the leap motion demos, you use the fingers a lot and hand tracking in addition. What those guys or this guy, actually not even sure who they are, but we'll link to it and I hope that we will reach more than 1,600 views, did is they used the hand tracking potential of the leap motion, but instead of using finger gestures, they took a normal Bluetooth controller that does not have positional tracking and mapped the buttons from the Bluetooth controller to a virtual Vive controller. So they basically can interact with Vive games without having a Vive controller, but by simulating the positional tracking of the Vive controller by the hand tracking of the leap motion and the button presses by this dummy Bluetooth controller. And somewhere in the video, he also goes on that you can do the body tracking with a Kinect. So you can use the body tracking of a Kinect and you don't need a lighthouse system at all when you don't have the budget, but you suddenly found a Vive on the floor somewhere to play Vive games. But to me, this is very interesting regards. You don't necessarily need to use the full potential of a device like Leap Motion, like the finger tracking is not necessary here. It's more important to use the hand tracking and combine it with something. And maybe we just always are too stuck to, you know, do something perfect and, you know, just get the full potential out of the device, whether sometimes maybe the half of the potential is already good enough, and then we don't need to figure out how the other half should suck less, but substitute it by something better. So just a thought experiment that I think the VR community should consider. But
I think, Peter, I'm going to cut you. I think the takeaway here is that Leap Motion can be used as a form of inside-out tracking for other things.
Yes.
Would that be accurate?
Yes.
Okay, let me rewind because I want to show a few frames. Essentially you're talking about the pinch gestures where you don't really need to do like the leap motion pinching. It's more about pressing the pressing where your fingers would be on the controllers, say if you had a Vive controller.
No, it's actually pushing physical buttons on the physical controller you have in your hand.
Let's look at that. So right here. Exactly. This took me a while to notice too. Is that it's
strange because it's actually black and white video.
Yeah, that black and white video is actually the Leap Motion kind of video output.
Yes,
and
here's the controller.
Can people see that in the shot? Let's see. Yes, they can. Right there. There's what is he holding? A stem?
I don't think it's even stem. It's some kind of cheap Bluetooth controller, I would assume.
Right.
Something that has no other options than buttons.
So some kind of a Bluetooth controller that you could use, and then with a leap motion that now becomes a sixth off controller. This is the way kind of mixed reality, Windows mixed realities headsets are working as well. They have inside out tracking for the controllers. So it's, I mean, it's a proven principle. Curious to see if this, here's where this makes sense, Peter, and why it's not just the thought experiment.
Yeah.
This could make sense for mobile games, you know, like Gear, Daydream, what and whatnot, where they have very limited controllers currently, and having cameras actually tracking them would make a big
difference. Yeah, and I mean, Leap Motion is not expensive.
And you know, Leap is already getting integrated into Qualcomm's design where it comes
into Qualcomm's. Mm-hmm. Oh, I didn't know that. That's impressive.
Mm-hmm. Leap Motion has actually shown off their Oh man, it was on another episode of Research VR when I was doing it live. Silly, you should have paid attention.
No. I know that they wanted to integrate it inside other devices. I didn't know that it was Qualcomm. I know that they got 50 million funding, but the Qualcomm part
went. No. Qualcomm did. I don't think Qualcomm invested in them. But this is what.
It's not Qualcomm.
Back.
Whoa.
Like, so this is what we're talking about.
It's a standalone Qualcomm headset thingy, right?
So that
and they have the Leap Motion integrated. Wow.
Yeah, I even have a video of it. I can't find it. But essentially, in the front, they had a mobile.
Yes, wide angle stuff.
I can't spell when I'm live. Oops.
My nose is itching.
I know.
Just random thoughts we have in our heads.
This is it.
Yes. Okay, is this one I saw? Yes.
So that could work really well.
Yeah. I never tried it. Yeah? I really want to try it.
Oh, I've tried it.
I don't think they sell it.
Their FOV, no, they don't sell it. Their FOV is like
super... It's 130, right?
Super wide. Like, you can like go like this and it still works. So that's fascinating.
I
mean,
I'm sincerely impressed by the Leap Motion company because I bought the sensor. I got it actually for free the moment they launched as a developer and it was so bad. And it's... Still the same day, the same sensor, but the software improved so much.
Yeah, they did.
That actually became useful.
This is a different sensor, however. This is new.
Yeah, sure. This is an improvement, but I kind of trust them, you know, still being, what is this?
This is what it actually is. I think this is their mobile version. If I find a YouTube video of, we had a guest on the show, from Leap Motion, and they were showing off their Vive attachment, which was like their new sensor. It was actually, I think it was one of the first times that they've ever shown that off in public.
Whoa.
Yeah, Martin Schubert was our guest on it.
Yeah, I should maybe focus more on the video we are doing and not just audio.
Here it is, architectural design. All right, let me just dive through. That's me.
That's you in a corner.
Wait, I want to show it. Look at this. I found it.
Oh.
Yeah, pretty epic, isn't it?
Yeah, it even has the original Leap mount. Ha. Huh.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, so, you know, this is typical stuff that they used to have.
But, I mean, it's an ultra-wide-looking sensor compared to what they had originally. It looks like it's kind of just retrofitted
impressive. On top.
So.
Well, I really want to see new products for them. Okay.
Should we dive into our main topic of the week?
Yeah, I would say,
Mobile
because
AR.
All the topics we discussed are kind of going there, yeah.
All right, so Apple, as
leading that way.
Most people have heard, I'm going to move this out of there. Like most people have seen, Apple has been pushing their AR kit pretty heavily for iOS 11, and that's really, really important because it's now bringing in. My main argument is that since there are so many Apple developers, Swift developers, people that have just dealt with mobile phone apps before, the scale of developers is huge. So it's going to make a big difference in terms of the output of VR and AR apps that are coming in the next year.
I was listening to one of the Apple or Android podcasts that I subscribed to, and they had a good point. So technically, the Tango platform from Google is, from the technological perspective, way more sophisticated. However, Google announced the Tango platform, Tango, and the developers went out of the room without a phone and without the software. Apple announces ARKit, and anyone who is a developer can flash their new phone that they already have to the new iOS 11, and they have a device to develop this. You know, till now, it was for Tango super difficult to get it. And honestly, no one kind of believes that Google is really committed to it. And regards the IR kit, if you read the numbers, there are potentially 360 million devices out there right now that can support it. And from what I tested it on the Hanno VR once again, with the iPad Pro and an iPhone 6, I think, or 6S, I don't remember, it was stable. Like, it obviously doesn't give you the mesh reconstruction, but it was very, very stable, and it's very impressive. And it's definitely, you know, something that a lot of people have been dreaming about. Not that I consider it true AR or true mixed reality, like it should be completely, but it definitely is way ahead of the game through the, you know, big amount of people talking about it. Like, because it's Apple and Apple stock and whatever is super important, it brings the interest of people way back. But it also triggers a lot of those posts and a lot of those opinions. AR will kill VR, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a step. It's certainly a step into actually making these apps something that most mainstream public would use. VR obviously is a very a power user thing currently, but when it's something based off your phone, oh, I'm holding up my phone. You can't see it in VR. I'm holding up when I have a phone integration where literally anyone, like you said, can walk out of the room after hearing about it and actually download something and try it out. It makes a big difference. We have a few notable things I want to show that I've just seen in the past couple of days. I've myself have been experimenting with it as well. This is something I saw this morning. Someone made a hand painting app where the phone is actually tracking his fingers, and that plane is actually the kind of the plane tracking that happens when it detects a plane, obviously. And but it's kind of incredible how it's tracking the fingers so well, and then check that out, and then you can pull it out of the
page. And it becomes 3D. So he literally put his two fingers together, drew with it, and then he basically pulled them up, and it created a 3D shape.
Right. I mean, so would you use this every day? Would you use this for your notes every day? Who knows? Maybe not. But the fact that it works this well, and actually, like, there's no leap motion on the iPhone. This is on an iPhone 7 Plus. Like, there's none of that, and it's actually doing precise finger tracking. I think that opens up a lot of doors that I don't really know exactly where it's going to go.
I have a vision.
Okay. What is your vision?
So I was, till the moment, I had my N900.
This is the
big laugh with styluses. However, a piece of plastic or even the Apple Pencil, you know, you're kind of still drawing on a screen. Now imagine you would have, through augmented reality, a very precise stylus, but you also would augment your real notes that you take with a real pen, or you would augment the screen of a Surface, for example, right, or an iPad Pro, with information kind of goes out of it. So you could arrange your ideas finally not 2D, right?
Mm-hmm.
So mind map in 3D, or presenting data in 3D, doing notes, arranging photos. Like, the cases still have to be figured out, but that basically takes off the flatness of notes, because notes are usually flat, even if you have a screen like the Apple Pencil. Stuff or the Surface, it's still flat.
You know? So you mean in terms of arranging and organizing your notes based on...
Yes. Arranging, organizing, and also lifting them to the third dimension whenever it makes sense.
So the question really is like, okay, these are apps. This is what I had made this week. Why does it keep making the sound? Where I had scanned this location and then, you know, processed it with photogrammetry and then overlaid it.
It looks real.
It does look real.
Wait. Is this your garden?
This is my backyard. And then
this is a model in your garden.
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Like, before you came close to the gap where it started, it kind of had... Exactly.
It looks
when
like,
you just stop here.
It kind of just looks like...
From the quality, it's so shitty, like, in terms of pixels, that I don't see the difference.
Right.
It looks to me like you really have a small park there.
All right.
Wow.
Which is pretty neat, right? Like, it looks really cool on an iPhone.
Absolutely.
The question I was making is that I want to see what Apple's first-party apps are actually going to integrate.
Yeah.
Can you come a little closer to me? I think we're a little too far. We need to keep the
absolutely
keep the love a little
absolutely
bit.
Absolutely. I'm moving.
What's up? Okay, great. So much love in here. Oh no.
Yes, absolutely.
Keep happening.
VR is just for love.
No. This is what happens when I try and get close and comfortable with someone, is the camera keeps getting stuck.
Yeah, it's okay.
It's okay. Early days, early days.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, we are developing, but also the fact that you see more and more devices trying to combine IR and VR and basically allowing you to switch between those modes. And the fact that you don't necessarily always want to have your surrounding around you, or you sometimes want to have things in the place where you would place them. So, I mean, the question is, will Apple basically have any meaningful case that they can present except, oh, you have your furniture? Because what you just
showed me is awesome. Yeah, but they're not going to make that app. Like, they're not going to make the app, furniture designing app, right? Like,
don't you think they should at least, you know, like they did with the iPhone, they kind of show the way to go? Don't they need to do it with augmented reality?
Well, they are. The point I'm trying to make is that those apps that we all think are going to be really cool with ARKit and iPhone are not actually like those. They're putting it out there for developers to make this type of stuff. And then I'm wondering, what are they going to do? Like, with a notes app, would augmented reality make sense in there if it's a phone based app? Because, like, there's very limited interactivity you can get with these things, at least as far as I've seen on an iPhone.
Although I would actually put my bet on the fact that they combine this ARKit with making photos and videos. So they really go for this creative part. Not so much for the software, doing something useful, productive, in a sense we discussed, but rather making your photo-making abilities better. So let's say it kind of scans the surfaces and you can very easily hide something. Or
that's a good point.
I know, it kind of puts rockets around you. I don't know.
That's a very good point. I think
rather the creative part.
So rather than actually highlighting the technology itself, it probably will be it probably will be manifested
really good.
In a sense that, like, yes, it's a very integrated a seamless part of the app where it's like, oh, suddenly it does magic where it like removes a part of something in your scene. And
this would be
it.
Apple style.
That would be just a better way of integrating this tech than like really pointing to it. This is
ultimate question is, it's fucking gorgeous.
Is that cool?
I'm sorry for swearing, but it looks absolutely, I know, surreal. Because first of all, the scanning process is so good. And that kind of blends very nicely in. So it doesn't look like those bulky models you would usually have with IR.
I just realized.
But then also,
there we go.
Will Apple actually go for the VR part with the iPhone? Will they want to do something similar to Daydream?
I think
because
they
the phone will be capable.
They totally can now.
I mean, hardware wise, they will be capable of it completely. Yeah.
Sixth off for sure.
They can partner up with someone.
With the newest phones, I think you'll be able to do it. But I don't know if they'd want to. Want to push such a premium feature on only the latest two phones, just the 7, the 7 Plus, and the 8 that's coming out. So maybe, but I think you totally can do it. We've seen companies actually integrate that already.
Sixth off
tracking. So that's really exciting.
I have a dream.
I have a dream of a device.
I have a dream of a device. Let's imagine some kind of headset. Doesn't matter how it looks like, but you literally take your phone and you put it in, but that's not where the magic begins. The magic begins with the fact that the phone has not just one micro USB plug, but actually one HDMI in. So the headset has an external GPU that connects through the micro USB-C, whatever, and the phone uses a more powerful GPU of this device I have on my head. The picture going back to the phone through the HDMI cable, whatever they have in mind, there is an additional battery somewhere on the back of my head that leverages all this huge, enormous device. It has it doesn't have to be a 1080 on my head, but something more powerful than an average processor. I've been rereading a lot of Wikipedia lately just to understand the power in terms of gigahashes, megahashes, and whatever of my S8 compared to a 1080. So how to compare them and stuff. I'm pretty sure that the difference is enormous, and you can definitely put a Tegra, which will be still more powerful than the processor. I guess it should be more powerful than the one in the S8 I have in some kind of headset. Basically use external GPU.
Does the S8 run on the Qualcomm 3 or 835 chip?
They have two chips. They have one that is Qualcomm and one that is this I don't know how to pronounce it. The Samsung chip.
Okay. And they're just two different versions?
Yes, for the European market and the other market, but the GPU performance is very similar.
Mm.
But I have no daydream support. I have daydream support on my S8.
That works. Really exciting. It's,
yeah, but I want some kind of fancy device. And then the best case would be if it would have fancy cameras that would connect to the phone, and then I could use also as like a military reality device. And maybe a plug to my brain.
I think in terms of the connection that you're talking about, and in terms of not just a VR, a mobile phone and a mobile headset being a one-directional thing, I think that that's definitely going to be true. And if I'm not mistaken, I think that your VR has some kind of internal...
It has, unfortunately, only sensors. I took it apart a few times. It has only tracking. It has no calculation or whatever.
But eventually when you do, and this NVIDIA, going back to the NVIDIA SIGGRAPH talk, they talk a lot about breaking up the processing per device. So everything that has to do with 3DoF, 6DoF, and pixel kind of rendering should be done closer to the eye where you have, and he was even suggesting pushing out like things that don't need to be updated every frame. So in terms of like lighting, can be even pushed not just to an external GPU like your phone or your computer, or he was even suggesting the cloud for slower rendering things, and everything that needs to be, you know, up to date at least 90 frames a second can be done locally. So I think, yeah, you're right. There's going to be definitely the direction with like the mobile headsets are going to go into a bi-directional state where your phone is feeding things to your headset, and your headset is sending back some of the processing to your phone. And whether the battery lies in your head,
devices will survive?
Will they survive?
Do you think those devices will because wait, let me rephrase the question. Will they survive in terms of that there will be still a high demand for them, that they will be produced? Or will the AR kit, you know, convince the average user that he doesn't need VR and he will just, you know, be happy with his Snapchat?
No, I mean, I don't think they're going to be such separate things. Like, you don't want to, it's already such a segmented and small idea market. There's not going to want to be just this, asking. Like, battle of, no, I think they're going to, the answer to your question would be, like, they both enable the same end result. And it's kind of each company's kind of gonna have their own strategy going into it, because I know is your nose itching too in these headsets? Yeah,
yes.
We keep it's scratching ridiculous. Our noses. Are you wearing a Rift?
Yeah. Yes. It's Daniel's right. Rift.
Quick tangent.
It's a Rift that Daniel from Realities was wearing. Thank you very much for it. It's
quick tangent. Pleasant. I don't know how Oculus did this, but there's a fabric that's like in between your lenses in a Rift.
Yes.
And that fabric is kind of like this, not Velcro, but it's kind of like spandex. But when you have some wear and tear on that thing, you have little microfibers that stick out and they freaking tickle your nose. And so that's what's happening.
Is that what happens?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it's really annoying.
That explains a lot. I just saw it, some kind of allergic reaction. Whoa.
No, it's not. It's definitely not allergies. It just... the Vive doesn't have it. Vive has a plastic nose cover, which I guess they...
Yeah, it feels, maybe a little more sweaty, but not as itchy. Itchy and sweaty is a new VR.
I just realized you don't know why I'm like, I keep crying. It's because I keep grabbing the camera, but you don't see the camera. You have no idea.
I believe you that something is happening. And, you know, it's in a similar way. Let's go to the metaphor. Whenever I see people having a VR headset, but I don't have a VR headset on, and they're dancing weirdly through the room, I believe they have a nice experience. And whenever you move your hands in the air, I also assume it makes some kind of sense for you. Just I don't see it.
That's right.
Okay, do we have any questions?
Yeah, let me check, actually. Travis Barker. What's up, Travis? Thanks for helping us out. He actually came in from last week when we had a call out for people helping us with comments, questions, and moderation. Mr. DNA suggests that integration with map directions would be good for ARKit. And Mr. DNA, you're completely right. We actually have seen someone do a ARKit demo with Google Maps where they integrated kind of like a yellow brick road, or it's not yellow. It was actually purple, but it's basically it paints the road purple for you to follow. I think that's probably going to be the first integration that they'll have for talking about first party apps for Apple. What are you doing?
I'm just checking the time.
Oh, okay. You have to leave?
The No, it's fine. I was just checking the time, and the problem is that my sweat or whatever is in my face gets the lenses of Oculus very
foggy,
milky. But I foggy and milky. But I only notice it in big screen, because in big screen I kind of want to look at my screen and don't shoot at roboters, you know. But I always try to, like, I feel like a 80-year-old person sometimes, see on a train having two pairs of glasses, trying to look at their phone. I'm like the same, you know, trying to make the screen even bigger and bigger, trying to read this one number. Yeah.
Anyway.
Sorry. So maps.
I think maps will be probably one of the better integrated things that Apple will do in terms of their...
That might be true, although they screwed up maps a few times.
Well, I'd say initially in the beginning, but they actually already have... Let me look this up. They already have this really cool... Let me fix the camera. Sorry.
It's okay. In the meantime, I can make a joke that maybe Andy Rubin with his essential phone will destroy Apple anyway.
That's a whole other conversation. I'm curious as to why people are jumping into the... I wouldn't laugh at it. I think there's probably some strategy behind the jump into it.
No, what he suggested is very good. Yeah. Oh no, I just don't see him deliver.
Yeah, they did miss... they did totally miss their their date.
Will it be Daydream? Did he have a toad? So there will be Daydream support?
I can't see.
Actually, edited the first time my Wikipedia. I was editing the Daydream page, adding phones that were missing. I'm officially a Wikipedia editor. Yeah, it was my first time.
Oh, God. Sorry, guys. Give me a second here.
I see myself.
I just don't know how to grab the screen without grabbing the camera. I have to, like, lean.
In the meantime... It's okay. In the meantime, I can maybe a little bit explain you the process of publishing podcasts and stuff. So we are building up a pipeline that would allow us to stream it, like we do it right now, and very quickly afterwards push it out. And so far, it's very wonderful. So far, we didn't need it because we usually pre-recorded things. Mm-hmm. And we just need to establish this pipeline that works very nicely, and we can invite guests and other things. And we are, you know, moving towards becoming the best VR podcast out there.
We are moving towards. What do you mean moving towards? We are.
Yeah, we are. I'm just joking. Well, I mean, no. I'm pretty sure there's some kind of Korean podcast that copies us one to one.
Well, the point of our podcast is, I mean, we can make Research VR one of the more mainstream VR podcasts, but I think the point of it is to kind of talk a little bit more, like, deeper into how some of this works rather than just covering the news. We want to cover the interesting scientific aspects and bring you, like, the cognitive science perspective. But are you raising your hand to talking?
Yes. No, I'm kind of raising my hand, so I don't interrupt you. We have a lot of listenings and no one complains. That means what we are doing is good, or they are all fake. So when you don't complain, we just keep on going like we like. So that's give us good feedback or constructive feedback.
Mr. DNA.
So we look at a video.
This is one of the more basic ones where, like, you can just kind of look around and it puts pins exactly on things. Cool. This is really cool. I think this, you know, if you're walking down a street and you're looking for shops to eat, it's highlighted absolutely. For you.
I love it.
There's one where he's actually walking on the street. Oh, look at that.
Yeah, what you see is you basically view through the camera the street, and into the street it draws above the ground a line that you need to follow. It was additional errors showing you, errors showing you the direction.
Arrows. Yeah, it's really neat. I think
so that doesn't look bad.
Andrew Hart made for the beginning. One.
Nice.
I think this could probably will get integrated.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
So this Andrew video was outside. I never tried ARKit. I didn't thought about it. How does ARKit perform on the street? Like
ARKit works.
Okay, 5, 6.
Dude, it's a multi-room. I don't know. I mean, I haven't tested how far.
But if I walk through the city, if I start to walk through the city,
I'm sure GPS will have a big role in keeping things.
That was my point. I was trying recently explain someone how they might have done the magic, and I just listening. I was reading the list through all the sensors. So, for example, if you lower it down or get it up. It most likely also uses a barometer for that. So it kind of knows where the ground is by kind of estimating that. When you have GPS signal, it obviously can use it too. It can use Wi-Fi triangulation, Bluetooth triangulation, all kind of things, and then merge them through multi-step modeling into all kind of weird models in behind. So they kind of must have squeezed every part of the data, built models for that, integrated them, built models out of the integration part, and kind of integrated even further. Whenever you are different cases, it kind of can utilize different data. I mean, it sounds kind of easy, but it's, I guess, super difficult to build.
Well, and with Apple, when you know you have like 3 or 4 different devices that you're working with rather than thousands like Android, you can really, I guess, take advantage of the onboard sensors. I don't think they're doing anything with barometers. It's
why not? So you get the info how high the phone is.
Maybe. I mean, I haven't
seen that. You just fuse it in your model. I mean, they won't tell you, but why not fuse the data into the model if it's not
then easy? Oh, actually, the point I was trying to make is not the barometer, but the Wi-Fi like triangulation of themselves. Because
Work.
I know you can, and I'm sure,
but only in combination. But only in combination
with what?
There's like one paper I read where if you do just Wi-Fi triangulation, it's super inaccurate. Also, if you use just IMUs, it's super inaccurate. Bluetooth triangulation, also kind of, is kind of very inaccurate. But when you fuse them with models, like step models and other things, then the Wi-Fi itself, triangulation, adds additional data, even though it's noisy. So it has not just entropy. So it might help them. Who knows? They won't tell us. But
if people in our audience know exactly how ARKit is working, let us know if we're wrong.
Yeah, it would be lovely. Any engineers out there from Apple, you don't want to work for that company anyway. A lawsuit is a lot of fun. Leak us the information.
Someone on Periscope is suggesting a GTA-type game that utilizes maps, actually. That could be cool, where you're actually walking around your city and the game is the city. Like, you don't have to recreate, you know, the city for the game, as the city is the game. But you can have essentially characters on the street that you can go and interact with. Like,
definitely.
Yeah, I think that
might distract you and it might do an accident, but there are cars with those head window screens, right? HUDs.
Oh, like HUDs.
And if it pairs with an iPhone, there are cars coming up with it more and more. And I mean,
well, this doesn't imply a car. I think like walking up, but like imagine walking up to an NPC that's on the street here and you know, having a conversation about or starting the quest that way, and actually they're on the street. I wonder how much of an idiot you'll look like to most people. They're just like, what the hell is this guy talking to? I wonder how you'll get over that. But
I want to address this point. A lot of people recently were kind of excusing themselves in front of me by putting the headset when they were putting the headset on their face and kind of, you know, not looking at me anymore or doing weird things with the headset. So to me, like looking at headsets and VR for so long, kind of very natural. But before that, 10 years ago, people were kind of very considered rude using Bluetooth headsets. That was kind of strange. Now VR is kind of strange. Pretty sure people will get used to it very much. The moment the 350 million people out there with the iPhone will do it, it will become common narrative.
I'm curious. I don't know. I mean, I hear the point that you're making that like it takes time for social structures to be built around using these crazy new wearable technologies. I'll admit it. I'm very embarrassed to take out my drone VR goggles when I'm out about with my drone, because it's just like, ugh, I already have a drone, or it's already making a bunch of noise, and here I am sitting with this freaking white headset, just like bang, that makes all these noises and sounds. I don't know. I think at this point, with the state of how big these headsets are, it's a little embarrassing still. And it makes sense, but I mean, I'm curious to see how holding up a phone towards someone or towards nothing, I don't think that's that big of a deal in terms of breaking social rules.
So, but speaking with it, like, people still don't use Siri that much outside of
house. Well, it could look like you're FaceTiming with someone if you're talking into your phone and holding it up like this. I think that can be interesting.
Okay, true. A good point.
Let's see. Travis Barker is asking me, actually, he's asking me directly. He's like, what kind of problems will this create? How do we deal with distractions and avoid stepping out in front of a bus or something? I think if it's actually mobile phone based, then you're actually looking at your phone, then the periphery of your vision still isn't being blocked. So I guess the problem of walking out to a bus, it's the same problem as like people would have with texting and walking. Okay. Are you exploding on me now?
I just had recently a few near-death accidents where I just nearly run into someone or a pole because I was trying to text on my phone. It is very distracting. However, imagine that your phone will become so good that it will detect the dangers for you and will displace it.
That would be nice, actually.
Like, your phone would take over your
collision.
Consciousness.
No, your phone can be the collision detection, kind of like driving in a Tesla, you know? Exactly. Like, it predicts the things from happening before they do, and it buzzes in your hand. Or actually, it doesn't even need to do anything that alertive, that much with alert. It can just, like, redirect you to walk that way, and then you miss the whole bus.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So all people will kind of chaotically walk around the city. There will be like no traffic rules, and they all kind of swiggle around.
That's right.
Among each other.
ARKit will save the world. That's our conclusion for today. But I'm glad. Okay, so we covered a good amount of smaller use cases that we're seeing currently.
We did.
We made a few predictions about how Apple, I think, will integrate ARKit into their iOS natively in terms of their own apps. We're curious to see what more can happen actually coming from. I'm thinking how Facebook, Google, and Snapchat will be able to integrate them ARKit into their apps. I don't know if they will. Maybe I think Facebook will probably use their own SDK. But final predictions. We want to hear from you guys. What do you think ARKit will be used for? And I don't want to just keep it down to iPhones. How will Google use their Google Lens? How will Facebook use their mobile AR platform? We're very curious to see what it means to actually have a phone. I'm holding up my phone again. Don't you see it? How is this going to work? Holding up your phone and walking around. Send us some of the really cool examples that you've seen. We want to feature them on our Twitter at ResearchVRcast.
Exactly.
We like having
you want to get featured, write us a good comment.
Well, okay. It's not a quid pro quo situation, but it would be nice.
I just wanted to make it. I was kidding. I mean, everyone's used to me.
That's right. follow us on Twitter at ResearchVRcast. Find us on Facebook at ResearchVR. I need to start playing the outro music, but it's okay. He'll add it in post.
We'll do it. So Research VR Facebook. We have a webpage where you can download the podcast, but most importantly, go to iTunes, rate us, and you can also listen to the podcast when you subscribe via the podcast catcher of your choice.
That's right. If you are listening to this live and or in video form, we do have this as an audio form podcast. Find us on any of the podcast listeners that you listen on, and if you can give us a thumbs up or a review, it would be awesome, because we would love it all from our bedrooms and for free
for the thumbs up.
We're doing this for the thumbs up. I will work for thumbs up.
Here you have a second one.
All right, guys, thanks everybody for joining.
How about the music? Come on, the music.
Okay, I need to open it up again. Wait, give me a second, VLC.
And I describe right now me as Goofy dancing.
Wait, I'm not playing.
I'm very glad that no one snored in the room. Like, I was recording today a podcast, and there was a guy so much deep in sleep that he was snoring. It's fun.
Here we go.
YouTube, it feels the sweat.